1-2, 1-2. Okay, sounds good, yeah. Yeah, so look, my name's Neville, and I'm an addict. Just before I start, I want to thank Mimi for that chair. It was a great chair. Really good to hear you. And it's funny, because you shared a lot, and it's like, as you were sharing, as you were sort of started, I was going, yeah, yeah. But I was really identified with everything you said. It wasn't until you mentioned you were a stripper that I'm not a stripper, but, you know, if I... It's not because I'm too good for it, because no one would pay me to strip. If they would have done, I would have done it. Because when I was using it, I'd do anything to use, you know, to get the money to use, you know, anything. You know what I mean? So, anyway. So, yeah. It's good to be here. I got asked to this chair on, I think it was Tuesday, and my first thought was, no, I'm not going to do it. Because that was my first thought. Unless it's about taking drugs, you know. Initially, I think no, I don't want to do it. But then my second thought is, yeah, I need to do service, you know, because I got clean, I'm not quite synonymous. I need to remember that. And it was like, you know, I'm clean for 3.5 years. But, you know, I came to my first meeting 18, I think it's about 18, 19 years ago. So, you know, I didn't sort of come skipping through the door, pick up the pen, start writing the steps, you know, get a sponsor, you know, do all the things suggested to me. I came in and thought, this is great, but it's not for me. You know, I've got some using to do still. And that was one of the worst decisions I've ever made, actually. I went back out. Anyway, we'll come to that later. I just want to start. Before I start, I just want to say the reading, that guy was reading that reading, it's a really long reading, and there's quite a few of them, and they can be really boring. When I hear them, I think, this is really boring. But the reality is, the readings are really important here, I think. You know, everything you need to know about NA is in the readings. You know, you can listen to my story, or Mimi's story, or your story. Our stories are all different. What you need to know is what's there. What I think about recovery changes from day to day. So some days I love it, and other days other days I hate it, you know. Some days I think this, I think that. But the reality is, what's in the readings is what's about here. So, you know, take what you can from what I say, but, you know, try and listen to the readings, because it might save your life. I've never shared for 40 minutes, so I don't know how this is going to go. But it's going to be okay, though. You know, what I say is what I say. You know, that's it. That's kind of what I know about NA. It's funny, because when I heard I was doing this chair, like, I sort of went online, I listened to a few of the tapes, and there's no one really talking about drugs. And I was thinking, you know, I came here to get off drugs, and I was a fierce drug user for many, many years. You know, and it's like, you know, when I share nowadays, because it's quite short, generally, I don't really talk much about my using, but I'm going to talk about it tonight because it's, you know, it's important, I think. You know, as you said, Mimi, it's like, you know, when people first come here, they need to hear about people that are taking drugs. Because you look around the room, you might think, if you're new, you might think, well, this lot, you know, everyone's sitting here quietly, no one's getting up, there's no fighting, there's nothing going on there. But, you know, you might think, no one's ever taken drugs here. You know what I mean? But the reality is, if we were all using, there'd be a different scenario going on in this room right now, that's for sure. So, anyway. My dad came to England from Jamaica in the late 50s, you know, sort of Windrush generation, not a Windrush, but around about that time. And he came on his own. I'm sort of one of four children. He came, you know, he was married, he came here, you know, got a job, put a house and that, sent for my mum. My mum came with my elder sister, and then I was born here. And, you know, I wasn't brought up my mum and dad were sort of hard working, you know, decent people, you know. I wasn't brought up to be what I turned out to be, you know. And, you know, I was born in Park Lane. I live in West London, basically, but, you know, I lived in Maydeville for the first few years of my life, and I moved to Harrow. And from a very early age, I don't really know about addiction. I quite often think, you know, was I born an addict, or am I, was it just something I've learned? And I don't really know. It doesn't really matter either, but I do think about it from time to time, and it changes. But what I think today is I don't think I was born an addict. I think it's a behaviour that I learned. But also, no, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter, you know. And, you know, growing up, it talks about obsessive compulsive behaviour. I definitely suffer from that. I know that. Do you know what I mean? And growing up, my first addiction was like football. I used to love playing football when I was a kid. You know, I was just always out in the streets, kicking balls, playing football. That went on for many years until I met girls, in fact. And, you know, and then when I met girls, I sort of gave up on football. You know, not completely, but, you know, I wasn't so keen on playing football. I was more just in chasing girls and chasing balls. You know, so that's kind of where I went with that for a little while. And It's funny because I met this girl when I was a teenager at the time. I was late for drugs. I didn't start taking drugs until I was, or well, take drugs. It was alcohol. My first drug was alcohol, and it was when I was 14. And for me, alcohol, it's talked about in the readings, and alcohol is obviously, it's definitely a drug. But I wouldn't never come into these rooms if it was just for alcohol. And then the reality is my story is a story of a lot of denial. You know, all through my life, I've been in denial. I'm still in denial today, and I came here to break my denial. You know, because when I look at my history, it's pretty horrific, but I can still think that I'm not an addict. That I've just got a little problem and it'll pass, you know, because I've had problems before with other things that it's going to pass, you know. And the truth is, my drug addiction just got worse and worse and worse. It wasn't showing any signs of passing, you know. And anyway, I am. I started drinking when I was 14, basically, right? And when I first started drinking, I went to a pub with my mates and we just got completely wasted, you know? And it wasn't like it was like a sort of... I wasn't like drinking like to just have a little drink and have a laugh. I was drinking to sort of, you know, to black out, you know? I think in those days, I think it was barley wine or something stupid like that. Went to some pub crawl and I threw up. And that was kind of my introduction into drugs, you know? And for many years, it was kind of like, you know, for me, drinking drugs were a laugh for a very long period of time. You know, it's not, it wasn't all, because I've used quite a long time, obviously. I mean, I'm only 3.5 years clean. I've been in recovery before, like I said, and I had 3 years in as well. But, you know, it was a long road, a long descent, you know, because the way I look at it, there was a line that I was never going to cross. Like, when I was a teenager, I was drinking, and my denial told me that drink was okay, you know, because everyone drinks, there's pubs in the corner of the road, it's like, it's what people do, people drink, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. So I was drinking, I'm not going to start doing drugs or other shit like that. And then when I got to about 16, I started taking, you know, smoking dope. And when I was doing that, I was thinking, okay, you know, I smoked a bit of dope, but, you know, it's in my culture. At that time, I'd never been to Jamaica. I was born in England, but, you know, I was like, you know, Bob Marley, you know, Jamaica, everyone smokes weed there. I'd never been there, do you know what I mean? But it was like, it was part of that. My denial told me that it was okay for me to do that because it was part of my culture, you know. And then after that, I started taking coke. And I can't remember what I said to myself to say, thinking the coke was okay, because it wasn't part of my culture, and it wasn't, you know, it was just, you know, but I can't remember what I said, but, you know, the reality is I made it okay. It was okay for me to do coke, you know. And the main thing is I never really, I'm going to say this now, I don't know if this is actually true, I'm going to try to be truthful tonight, but I always think, when I look back on that period of my life, I always think, I was never really that keen on coke, but I certainly done a lot of it. And, you know, and obviously growing up, you know, I was basically a tearaway at school, and I was at school, I didn't go to school that much, I was bunking off school the other whole time, was in gangs, fighting, nicking cars, drug. I bought my first car when I was 13, you know, just didn't want to listen to anyone, I just wanted to do things my way, you know, it was just my way or the highway, I just done what the fuck I wanted to do, I didn't really listen to anyone, and that's how I was for many, 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 many years. Very hard of hearing. Not, you know, that thing of like, don't put your hand in the fire, it's going to get burnt, but I would just do it anyway. So you couldn't tell me that, I'd have to experience it. You know, I'd have to experience it. So I moved to London when I was about 16. I got kicked out of school. I was taken out of class when I was like 15, and that, so I was just very disruptive, and then I got kicked out. You know, and the thing is, when I was at school, I didn't see the point of going to school, because I thought, I want to work, I want to be a man, do you know what I mean? I'm not going to be, what I want to do is not going to be, I'm not going to learn anything from school. And then, of course, as soon as I left school, when I realised I started working, I realised I didn't want to work either. Because, you know, and my mum got me a job, and I was working with my mum, and I got in around my boss one day, and I just walked out. And in those days, I used to like going out to nightclubs. I was a party boy, and I liked to go clubbing. So we just go out every night, parties, all, you know, clubbing, you know, drink, drugs, women, all the rest of it. And I remember it very clearly. My 21st birthday, I had a party. I'd done this party. It was a warehouse party. And I was a barman in this bar. And every person that I served a drink to, I had a drink with them as well. So consequently, about, I don't know, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, I literally passed out. I blacked out. I was laying in the back of this warehouse, unconscious. I missed the whole party. The police came, closed it down. It was a big commotion. Got carried out, taken home, you know, sick all over me and everything. I woke up next day, I thought, that was a great night. I want to do that again. You know? And that's what I did. You know, I worked in the nightclub industry, and of course, What I didn't realise at the time was is that everyone, when you work in the nightclub industry, obviously everyone is at the very least is drinking, and most people do coke and, you know, and later on ecstasy and that sort of stuff, and it's just the norm. And I just thought everyone used to do that, you know. But the reality is that most people don't take drugs, and certainly not the way that I used to take it. You know, that's the reality. But I didn't see that, because my denial told me this is, you know. And it obviously very hedonistic as well. And I wanted that hedonistic lifestyle. I didn't want to be a straight girl. I wanted to be some, you know. I wanted to, the madness and the craziness and all the fun. You know, I didn't want to be, you know, sort of doing a normal job and, you know, getting a mortgage and getting married and having a bachelor. I just wanted to be, you know, a party animal. And I forgot to mention. Yeah, I mean, when this disease, for me, I'm Neville, right? But there's also a big part of me, and it's my thinking that's the problem. My thinking is, it's not really about the drugs in me, it's about my thinking. So when I think this stuff that I should do certain things, or I don't want to do certain things, I give it a name. And my disease is called Chucky. And Chucky basically wants me to get high, not come to meetings, you know, break the law. You know, if I get in an argument with someone, punch them in the face rather than talk about it. You know, just general bad behaviour, you know. And any given day, I have to sort of arrest Chucky and be Neville, you know, because Neville's not like that. And I wasn't brought up like that. I wasn't brought up like Chucky. Anyway, we'll come to Chucky later in the chair, but, you know, I worked in clubs for a long time. And then what I believed during that period of time is I crossed the line with using. Where using was fun, we'd go out, we'd party, it was good fun, and it became very dark, you know. And the party started in my 20s, and then sort of 20-odd years later, I was still doing it. The party was over, but I was still partying, you know, I was still partying, still trying to keep it going. But the reality was, I wasn't going out anymore, I would just be at home, in the end, on my own, because I couldn't stand to be around anybody, you know. And that was my using. And it was a pretty shit existence, but my denial told me that it was okay. You know, when I came into the recovery this time right there, and I was like four stone lighter than I am now, I was in a mess. I didn't have a pair of trousers to put on, my trousers, because I had this bike, I didn't have no brakes on it, and I'd go down the, every day I'd get up and go to school, and like get my trousers would get caught in the chain of the fucking bike, and I'd, I don't know, literally, but they'd be all torn. It didn't fit me anyway, because I was, you know, I was like, way underweight, so I know I didn't have a pair of trousers to my first damage recovery. So, you know, I had a lot of friends that came to NA. Like, people would come to the clubs and that, and then they'd be around for a bit, and then they'd disappear. You know, and I think, where's so and so? And it's just like, and also, I must say, I think it's great this day and age. Like, in AA now, NA is a much bigger now than it was when I first came. There's lots of younger people that come in now. I think that's great, because when I was a teenager in my early 20s, if somebody came up to me and said, Neville, you know, you need to go to Narcotics Anonymous and, you know, get a sponsor and start writing steps and get some service commitments, you know, I would have just told them they're fucking mad and to leave me alone. Do you know what I mean? There's no way I could have done it. And that would have been, that's what I should have been doing a long, long time before I started doing it, you know. Anyway, I met this guy basically, right? And obviously I met loads of people, but there's one this one guy that I met, and he came to my flat. In fact, he didn't come to my flat. I met him, and he was clucking, and he called me up. I'd met him sort of through a friend of mine, and he said to me, he called me up one day and said, listen, I'm at home in bed, I can't get out of bed. Can you come around, take my credit card, go to the cash point, get some money out, call this guy, and get me some heroin, and get yourself some crack. So I thought, yeah, I can do that. You know, definitely can do that. And I done it, and then we became very good friends, obviously, because obviously my closest friends were the people that, you know, done the most drugs. You know, if you'd done loads of drugs, you could be really good friends with me. If you were worse than me, basically, there was a room for us to be good friends. You know, if you were straight go, then, you know, see you next week. So this guy, I mean, the problem that I had with is I wouldn't listen to anyone. And I would just literally wouldn't listen to anyone. I thought I'd had all the answers, you know. And there's very few people that I meet in my life that will say something and I'll actually listen to them. Very few. But he was one of them. And I think this is a high power thing, you know, because he was, I mean, it wasn't instantly, but like, you know, about a year later, after a lot of carnage and stuff, I'm jumping forward because this is my last recovery. But anyway, he got me to go to a meeting, my first meeting. In fact, he went to me. He said he had a nervous breakdown in my flat. This guy, right, about a year after I'd met him, we'd been using together, you know, quite heavily, three or four of us, and he had a nervous breakdown, and we got carted off. We took him to Westminster Hospital, you know, and I thought, okay, great, they're going to look after him, and it's going to be, you know, he's going to get some good treatment, whatever. He's going to get some help. It's going to be great. But and then about 3 days later, I was literally just getting home. It was like a Friday night. I remember it really well. I was just about getting tucked into some good stuff again. And I could hear him shouting out in the street because I had no bell in my flat. So I ripped it out because I didn't like, you know, I used to think of myself as like the king and queen. There's no bells at Buckingham Palace. You have to go appointment only. And actually my flat was like that. You couldn't just come round. My flat was called the Sin Bin. And you couldn't come to the Sin Bin uninvited. And there was no bell, you couldn't knock on the door or anything, you'd have to be invited. Well, I didn't invite him around anyway, unless you were a dealer, obviously. So he came round, he said, and he came in, I was like, oh, I could hear him shouting in the street, and obviously I was paranoid at this point, so I just had a big hit. And I let him in, and he said to me, you know, well, I said, now why are you? And by now I kind of wasn't even interested, because, you know, he wasn't using it anymore, so he wasn't any use to me, really. You know, and he said to me, you know, I'm going to a meeting, why don't you come? So I was like, you've got to be joking, really. He's really got to be. But I thought, you know, I kind of knew that he needed to go. I didn't know that I needed to go, but I knew that he needed to go. So I thought, I'll go with him, because I'll get him out of my flat anyway, for starters. So I went to a meeting, and I remember it was a Tabernacle. This is 18 years ago. And we went in there, and there was a lot of people there that I knew, basically. And they'd done what we'd been doing there tonight, where meetings. And at the end of the meeting, this girl said to me, Neville, it's really good to see you. I've been praying that you'd come into these rooms. And I was like, what's she talking about? anyway, how are we doing for time? Loads left, right?
Lots.
Okay. All right, I might have to talk about recovery at some point. Right. I might have to. Anyway, so I left that meeting and I went to another meeting, and basically what's it said here, you know, the three of us, the other two guys, like, the three of us came in at the same time, the other two relapsed instantly. I managed to stay clean. I went to meetings, and I'd done what the suggestions are, I followed the suggestions for most of my life. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I didn't just go to 90 meetings in 90 days, you know, I shared in every meeting that I went to, you know, as honestly as I could. I got commitment. My first commitment was putting the chairs out, you know, it was the, and I just connected with people, and I just, when I managed to stay clean. My friends who relapsed, they came back in again a few months later, and we were all clean for a few years. And I'm just trying to remember how it was, because this is a while ago, and it was all a bit hazy. But anyway, yeah, I mean, you know, I was sponsoring people and doing steps and doing all the things you're supposed to do, basically. And yeah, I missed a big bit. One of the reasons why I came in also is I was getting into a lot of debt, and what I realised is that my recovery, that I got a problem is that, you know, I was always very fond of a pound note, you know, making money and stuff. And when I was using, money became like just like tokens. It was just like I just needed money to buy drugs. I didn't really buy anything else. You know, all my money, didn't pay bills, didn't do anything I didn't have to do with money. So it was just all about using, you know. So when I when I relapsed, it was like literally, I've been around for a few years, and I thought my problems that I had when I first came in had sort of gone, and I never really accepted the fact that I was an addict. That was the thing. Although I came to meetings and that, I just thought, you know, my circumstances were that I needed a break, you know. And I just thought at that point, I thought, okay, I've been here for a few years now, right, you know, NA is great, but I kind of want to use. When I picked up alcohol, I wanted a drink. My thing was to say to my sponsor, yeah, but I didn't have a problem with drink. Why can't I drink? He goes, well, if you have a problem with it, but just don't do it. It's fine. I said, you don't really like it. I said, no, but I want to have a drink. Anyway, I had a drink. I remember it's Christmas Eve. I had a drink. Within about a few hours, I was on the phone. I got some light in that, and I used, and the paranoia kicked in again, and I was running the bath. I left the bath running. It flooded up my bathroom. My neighbour from downstairs came up, was knocking on the door, and I couldn't open the door to even speak to them because I was too pranked, you know. And It's Christmas Eve. I was supposed to go away for the week for Christmas. I didn't turn up where I was supposed to go. I was back in that cycle. And that's kind of like what I know about recovery is that it's talked about in the readings. It's the first one that does the damage. You know, I haven't used it for a few years, and I've got no intentions of ever using it again. But what I know is that I could walk out here tonight and use. That's what I know. So I have to be very vigilant. When I do that, everything that I think about my recovery will change. You know, because I'm quite staunch about my recovery now. But I know it's that first one that does the damage. I didn't understand that for years and years and years and years and years. You know, it took me a long time to get the concept that once I put a drug in my body, then my thinking, the obsession kicks in, and I'm gonna carry on. Because, you know, once I started using, I didn't know when I was going to stop and what was going to happen. You know, we'd just be on that roller coaster of using. So, you know, I started using again. Like I say, pretty soon I stopped coming to meetings. I think I used, came to a few meetings, went out, used again, came in and out, in and out. And then at that point, I went to a drug treatment center, not a treatment center, a drug drop-in place, and where you go to, I don't know what they do, actually. I mean, I went there for 17 years. I'm not quite sure what they do there. But but the idea is you're not just going to, don't use. Anyway, I went there for a long time, basically. And it's like, and the point is that I just didn't, I couldn't not, once I started using, I couldn't stop. And it's like, I kind of forgot about it now. And though I did go to meetings, because I relapsed for 10 years, I call it a relapse. It wasn't a relapse, I was using. I stopped coming to NA and I was just using. And it wasn't a relapse, I was just using. But I engaged with, you know, recovery places, you know, and tried to do it a different way. Tried to not to do it the NA way, like tried to do, you know, using once a week. And I tried many different things during that time, you know, using at certain times. My one thing was like I used like 6 o'clock at night so I wouldn't have to go. Like when I run out, it would be like in the middle of the night, I couldn't go and get any more. I could go, but it would be more difficult than in the daytime. Just lots of different things, you know, different times, different girlfriends, different countries, moving different flats, you know, all different things. And sometimes it would be okay, but the overriding factor was is it just wasn't okay, you know, and it was just, and I was. And to be honest with you, that period of using wasn't as bad as my first period. Before I came in that first time, I was I'd stay out for days and days and days. I wasn't doing that. I was just doing your day here and there. But the obsession was really on me, and it's like I'd either be using. If I wasn't using, I'd be thinking about using, or I'd be recovering from using, and that was my life, you know. And it's just like, and what I've realised today is that, you know, if that was shit as it was, it was what I was used to, you know, so it became my life. You know, I couldn't function any other way. I didn't want to go and do anything, or go anywhere, or go out, or, you know, be with anybody, or any girls I was interested in. I didn't want to be with them. I wanted to be alone. The drug became my girlfriend, you know. And all the things that you hear about in the recovery happened to me in that 10 years. You know, things like ending up going to jail, good friends dying, OD and dying in my flat. You know, obviously, you know, getting arrested, you know, crashing cars, drink driving, all that stuff, you know. Any girlfriend that I met, I would lose because through my addiction, because I couldn't hold down a relationship. And I'd pick a girl that wouldn't use, so I'd try not to use, and then I'd be secretly using, like she'd go out and I'd be, I have a pipe under the sofa and I pull it out and have a quick hit, and then I'd be sit there pretending to be straight, I'd be really high, so I'd be drinking neat brandy or something to sort of just take the edge off, you know, and it was just a fucking nightmare. And then she'd go to bed and I'd go, I'd be up in a minute, and I'd be just gonna have a little hit, and then I'd be up all night. And I'd go up at like 6 in the morning, she'd get up to go to work, and she used to think, what's wrong with this fucking guy? Do you know what I mean? And what was wrong with me is the love of my life was drugs, not her. You know, that's what was wrong with me. So, and that went on for a long time. And I'm going to say this, but Ian over here was my care worker, my key worker at that drug docking place. And, you know, if you don't believe me, I'm saying here, you know, you can speak to him, he'll vouch for me. And he was my key worker for about 10 years. And, you know, I used to go there fundamentally to nick sandwiches. You know, I didn't go there. And, because that's what my life had come to, you know, sort of. You know, I'd done a lot of sort of high class things, but at the end I was like a sort of gyro junkie, you know, getting away from my gyro check to come, and like walking in the streets at night getting dog ends because I couldn't afford a packet of fags, because a packet of fags were like £10, I could get a rock for that. Like, why would I buy a packet of fags? But I needed the tobacco for the ash and that sort of shit, so. But anyway, I was, you know, I was going to this group, I was going to this drop-in place, and they made me go to a relapse prevention group. Now, also during that time, I went to treatment three times, once in Bournemouth, once at a place called Chart, which is closed now, once in Wormwood Scrubs. Now, when I went to Bournemouth, I mean, I got referred for this place to go to treatment, and treatment, I think, is great, but for me, I think once you've been to treatment, unless you're all coming off of heroin or something, and you need to be taken out of your environment, I think, you know, they tell you what to do, but at the end of the treatment, they tell you to go to a meeting. That's what it comes down to. They say at the end of it, leave the treatment center, you go to meetings, and either you do or you don't. And it's like, I have to say, that people do get clean other ways. It's not just, and there's not any place you can get clean, but it's the right place that I've found, for me, it's worked for me, you know. And for me, because it's about the connection here, I connect with people that are on the, talks about it in the reading, the therapeutic value of one hand that you open up is unparalleled. You know, it's unparalleled. So, you know, when I was in Bournemouth, I was just was like, you know. Because when it first got put to me, I thought, you know, I'd be going to sort of Arizona or, you know, somewhere South Africa or somewhere, you know, somewhere exotic, you know, and I'd be sort of, you know, chilling by the pool, you know, and the rest of it. And I ended up in Bournemouth. You know, it wasn't part of my master plan. I was there for 3 months, and of course I got kicked out halfway through as well, because I got an altercation with someone that I was, we were living in an outhouse, and obviously when I took the drug away I was quite angry, although I didn't admit it at the time. I was obviously very angry because I was all about using drugs, so I ended up getting in a big argument and I got kicked out. And a friend of mine who was in recovery came and picked me up, took me back to London. I stayed with him for a week. They suspended me. I went back there and I finished the treatment. You know, I finished it. And I was always quite good at finishing treatment. I used to like treatment. I'd go there, because I'd been in recovery, I could talk about my feelings and, you know, my step work, and I could do step one, my powerlessness and manageability and, you know, and all that. And but what I couldn't do is I couldn't stay clean. You know, I'd just go to the treatment centre and then I'd chat all the chat, you know, and go in group, and I'd call people out in group and all that sort of stuff, and I'd leave, come back to London. And what I used to think was, is because around where I live, you know, I'm quite well known around there, and it's like there's a lot of drugs over in Notting Hill, and I was all big part of that, and I know everyone that sells drugs in Notting Hill. I mean, I was a part of all that stuff. So I just thought, you know, I'm too old, I'm too black, I'm too powerless to stay clean, you know. The reality is I'm clean now, and Notting Hill's still Notting Hill, it hasn't changed, but I'm still living in the same flat. You know, but I don't use. So, you know, that broke all the spell, what I thought about might be using, you know. Anyway, I came out of treatment. As soon as I came out of treatment, I picked up. Literally, I think, you know, when I was there, I wasn't going to use it. You can't go back to London, you're going to use it. I said, no, listen, what do you mean I can't go to London? I can't stay here. I need to go back to London, you know. You lot can stay. I've got a life in London. Like, I need to go back to it, which was bollocks as well. So I had no life in London. My life was using. You know, so of course I went back to London and I picked up straight away, you know. And you know, I'm skipping forward here. I mean, prior to that, my best friend that I used to use with, you know, died of this disease, you know, he OD'd. You know, his wife just came down one morning, he found him in the chair, you know, dead. And he was, and all this stuff was happening, and it was like, but I was thinking, I mean, like, well, my thinking was, yeah, but this is all happening, but it's not happening to me. It's like, there's no rock bottom for me yet. I'm okay, and you know, I'm okay. And people would say to me, never, you look a mess, you know what I mean? You're like, well, people would just thought, you know, there's nothing we can do, you know, they've given up on me, basically, you know. And went in treatment, came out, you picked up, used a few more years, got arrested, got put in prison. And it's like, what I've got. So when I was younger, I didn't want to. One thing that I was really scared of was going to jail. You know, I didn't want to be in jail because my using was all about being free, about being having freedom. And of course, being in jail that's not being free. So I desperately didn't want to go in jail. But when I went to jail, what I realised is it's actually not that bad. You know, because when I got to jail, I stopped using for 3 months. I was in there for 90 days. I was on remand, and I stopped using. you know. And there's a lot of drugs in the Scrubs where I was, but I kind of worked out that I was there for drugs. If I carried on using, I was never going to get out. And I was on quite a serious charge. I thought, I need to get out of here. All right, so I'm only halfway through. Okay, for 5 minutes, so I'll wrap it up. So basically, you know, in that group that Ian used to take, it was a relapse prevention group, and I went to that group, and I just was like, I was in there with like four or five people, and I thought they were all fucking mad. didn't know anything about anything, but the difference was they were all clean, and I would go to the group, and I'd chat, but and I'd go home and I'd use, you know. And old Ian used to say to me, "Why don't you go to a meeting?" I was like, and I'd go just to get him off my back. And he'd say to me, "Did you share?" I go, "No, I didn't share." Because I used to go to meetings and just stand at the back and not say anything, take everyone's inventory, leave early, and go and use. That's what I used to do. And around about that time also, I had this friend who used to go to meetings, I used to use with, and I used to go to meet her. She used to give me money so I could go and use. So by now, I was completely skinned as well. So I am... I don't know why. I called my dad up one day, and he was, I was supposed to go meet him, and I was supposed to go meet him on the Sunday, and I had a very fractious relationship with my dad, because I didn't really see him that much. I was very estranged from my family. You know, I'm one of four children. My younger brother died when he was a baby. My eldest sister died, only left two of us. My mum had died 2 years earlier from Alzheimer's. She had a very long, slow death. I didn't really see her because my mum doesn't smoke crack, and I was in London and she was in Hertfordshire, and the days that I could go and see her, I was too fucked to go and see her. So I didn't really see her that much. My sponsor said to me, "You need to go and see your dad to get some money to sort out some serious debt that I was in." But anyway, I was supposed to go meet my dad, and I'd arranged to go and see him, and I used the night before. And it was going to be like a short thing, but it ended up being much longer, and I didn't go and see him. And then I called him up 2 days later, and he said, "Why didn't you come and see me?" And I was just like, you know, and he said, "What's wrong with you? Why didn't you come and see me?" And I couldn't explain to him, but I knew it deep down inside of me that the reason why I didn't go is because I'm a drug addict, you know. And I was kind of beaten at that point. I just couldn't go. I just felt I couldn't go on. And I went to a meeting, and it was no different from the other meeting I'd been to, but I just reached the point where I'd had enough. And I left the meeting, and my friend answered the phone. So I called my friend up, and I said to him, you know, we're chatting about it. He said, "What are you going to do now?" I said, "Well," he said, "just go to another meeting. And that's what I did. And I arranged to meet someone at that meeting, and this person, it turns out they were taking it. They came and picked me up and took me to the meeting. And then again, I'd done a 90-90. And like I say, done the 99, I didn't just go to meetings. I'd done it before, and I thought I can do this again. And I just got commitments. I had the same sponsor. My sponsor was 5 years clean initially. He's now 22 years clean. At the time, he was 19 years clean. I've got the same sponsor. I started working some steps, slowly I might add. Got commitments, done some service, you know, and pretty quickly my life. And the thing about it was, is I always thought the addiction, the obsession to use, I thought was never going to leave me. I just thought it was so embedded in me. But the reality is, it left me very quickly. It left me before the end of that 90 days. And I haven't used since. And that was, like I say, it was like 3.5 years ago. And it's not to say I don't think about using. I do think about it from time to time. But the reality is, before, when I used to think about using, as soon as I thought about it, I would just go and use. People used to say to me, "Oh, but go, breathe, call someone. You know, pray, go for a walk, write about it." That was the worst one. Write about it. I was like, "No, I'm just going to call the guy. I'm just going to use. I'm not going to fucking write about it. I'm not going to go for a walk. I'm not going to breathe. I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to use." You know. So, but now I can think about using, and I can think it through. Basically, the reality, because I look at my history. My history tells me that I cannot use successfully. You know, that was clear a long, long time ago, but I couldn't accept it. But you know, it's. Today a friend of mine texted me, and I used to use this guy, and he said, "Well, you've got to get clean." I was like, "Don't worry, I'm going to get clean." And I got clean, and he's still using. He texted me today, and he's in a really bad place. You know, and he's obviously been up all night, and he texted me, he was all right. And he said to me, "You know, if you can get clean, I can get clean." And that's the bottom line, really. You know, it's like, you know, today I feel that I'm an example to people. You know, my friend that I called up to say, "What should I do?" He's because he was 6 years clean. He's been using. He called me the other day, asked me to sponsor him today, yesterday, and I'm going to sponsor him. The reality is that, you know, the carnies that in my life is past now because I don't use. When I was using, everything about me was about drugs, and today it's not like that. I live quite a simple life now. You know what I mean? It's not like there's no. I mean, I do go out a bit, but there's no like high life really, you know. But it's a simple life, but it's a much better life than the life that I led, you know. And I'm not hurting people, you know. I mean, I'm running out of time, so I'm gonna wrap this up. But you know, the reality is that today I live life on life's terms. Good things happen, bad things happen. My dad died when I was 1 year clean. You know, I thought when I first came in that if my dad died, I would use. You know, when my mum died, I did use. It was just an excuse for me to use more. But you know, I went to his funeral. I done the usual. I got up and spoke. Done the usual. Can't even say it. Yeah, thank you. And you know, and not didn't make it all about me. So I wanted to get up and go. Oh, you know, I've got a terrible son. You know, I mean, smoking crack all for my dad. And I never seen him. I didn't do that. I just spoke about my dad and what he'd done. And you know, and my sister was like, we didn't, you know, obviously, because I was able to do that through NA. You know, I mean, my sister was like, she was a bit shocked I could even do it. You know, and it's like. And today, I just try and do the right, next right thing, you know. And that's not to say that I do that. Sometimes I fall down, but what if I do fall down? I don't have to use on it, because before, if any little bad thing happened to me, I would just pick up, you know, literally. If anything good happened, I'd pick up. It didn't really matter. It was just an excuse to use, you know. I don't have to use today. If you are new, my message is just keep coming. You know, it's the same message as everybody else. Just keep coming back, because you know things do change, you know. That's the truth. At some point, if you keep coming to these meetings, things will change. You know, it might not be tomorrow. It might be, you know, it's when you're ready, really. And you know, all the things that happened to me brought me to a point where I could stop using. You know, it wasn't like, you know, it took time, but things do change. So don't give up, because it's, you know, I know there's a lot of shame. You might pick up, you might use, you might pick up a lot of shame in that. But the reality is, most people that have been coming have relapsed, and it's like there's no shame in it. It's part of the process. What you need to do is keep coming back and just keep starting again, because it's not a race here. It's like it's an ongoing, lifelong process. And, you know, you can live a life without drugs if you follow the suggestions here. And you might not get that straight away, but you'll get it at some point. So just keep coming back. And I'm sort of out of time, I think. So I'm going to leave it there. But, yeah, thanks.